The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
I'd like to finish up the 10th difference between the alchemist and the Baal Bitochen, and then, with your permission, I'd like to refer to something a little bit later, which I think might make things easier for us. V'asiri, the 10th difference. Shebaal hachemio im yivoda inyonoi, if his whole secret will become known, tihyeh sibas moisoi, it could be the end of him. Mipnei shemashu hu mishtadel v'toyreach bo hepech hanhogas ha'olam. Umanig hakol yashlit olov mi sheyemiseu kisheinoi yodea lahalim es soidu. If his secret gets out, he doesn't know how to hide his secret, then people find out, hey, this guy has a way to undermine all of society. Hepech hanhogas ha'olam. In the world, you got to work to make money. He just takes his chemicals, he takes his raw materials, and he makes money. And the manik hakoil, I guess the one who would have the power, will be yashlit olav, will send over to, on him, will make to be shalit over him, someone who will put him to death. We don't need a guy like this.
Manik hakoil with a lowercase man.
Yeah, the lowercase. Yeah. Lowercase kol, a lowercase manik and a lowercase kol. Okay. Vabatech bashem, on the other hand, the batech bashem, kasha yivoda bitchoinoi, when his bitochon will become known. In other words, what's his secret? His secret is chemistry. His secret is bitochon. Yigdal be'enei habriya iskivalt. Everyone will think, this great man, v'chabdu b'nei odom. People will honor him. He has the secret to bring forth from the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. This is something that's to be coveted, to be respected. V'yisborchu b'kirbosoi v'uveriosoi. And he will be the cause for rectifying communal problems, you know, the takona of his city, and to push off all type of attacks and all type of damage and things that could happen to his people, to his place. The tzaddik is the yesoid oilam, is the foundation of the world. The influence that Loit had there in Soyar. So the tzaddik, and I guess we pointed out the other time that he equates the tzaddik with the Baal Bitochen, because I guess that's one of the, we say it in the davening, we pointed out. We talk about Bitochen, Yemur HaChamecho Hashem Elokeinu, Vesein Socha Tevel Chol HaBoitchim B'Shimcho Be'emes, V'loilom L'Neivish Kevacho B'Tochen, Boruch HaShem HaShem, Mishonu Mivtoch, La'Tzadikim, not La'Boitchim. The tzaddik, he can't be a tzaddik if there's not bitochon b'Hashem. So that seems to be one of the critical criteria of the tzaddik.
Also, this is Yosef. Yosef is not a tzaddik.
It's also the Baal Bitochen. Yeah, Ashrei Agev Asher Asom Hashem Miftacho is Yosef.
Even though he was punished, we discussed this one.
Yeah, very nice.
Beis Halevi, even though he was punished for the 2 years in jail.
Mm-hmm. No, but it's goof. That's a Giloy Milson.
Right. It was such a smallish God that's put in a good word for me. Very good. It's a simon that he epitomized. That's a famous piece.
Very good. That's right. Yeah. We mentioned that. I think. Yeah, I know. Okay. Yeah. So anyway. So this is that. Now he talks. He starts a little bit more about. Until now, he talked about the advantages that this Baal Bitochen has. Okay. Now.
Anyway, what does Mepharshim say? This whole alchemy metaphor. He takes pains with this. 10 reasons. Was it like popular in his day? Like
it could be, but I guess the idea is to contrast the people who are. I imagine like this: a two-pronged answer to that. Number one, I imagine making money was always the primary focus of human society.
That was the overarching value.
That's right. It's all about making money. So the alchemist knows how to make money in his laboratory. So that's already a model for what life is all about. You want to accomplish, you got to make money. He makes it, and he has a printing press, okay?
Right,
he does it like this. So he does that. So I guess it's the contrast between one who would seem to have the perfect formula for human survival and all of its pitfalls and dangers as compared with the Baal Bitochen, who really has the formula, and it's a clean formula, and it's a safe formula, and it's a overriding formula, and it's a secure formula, and all the differences that he gave. Okay, so that's the best I could do on that. Now he starts the next paragraph, u'mitoyeles habitochem ba'Hashem, and then he says b'inyan ha'toyro, and b'inyan this, b'inyan that. Now I would like to stop at this point for a moment. The real reason is because I came to understand something today that I can't wait until we get to Perek Daled to share with you. I just can't. I admit, just the Maisa Yetzirah. However, I do believe that sometimes the Gedolei Olam wrote in such a way which was really pedagogically and educationally sound, but sounder for their generation than it is for ours. And let me explain. They say over the Rosh Hashiva's father, Reb David Leibovich, used to say that, look at the Mishnah, pedagogy. It says, the Mishnah says, HaMevi get Medinas Hayam. It doesn't tell you what a get is. It doesn't tell you who gets a get, who gives a get, who writes. Dive into it. And through the acting out of the scenes, one discovers and develops a concept which is more solid than describing it to me up front. A get is a husband and a wife, and a this, and a that, and a piece of paper, and a rabbi, and a edom, and a this. So this is much more educationally sound in terms of discovering. The Goyin says a little bit differently. He says, horeitze lehevin dvorov lechaveroi yetzamtzeim. He says, one who wishes to communicate understanding of what he's saying to his friend should be very brief, shemitoch sheyachshov yovin, because you'll force him to think, he'll talk to understand what you're talking about. So there is such a thing. But then I noticed the Rambam, the Tveris Yisroel, and others write hakdomas to Meseches Gittin. And they explain, this is a get, this is a husband, this is a wife, this is what? Oh, forget Oscroll. That's the Obgeret, Oscroll. But even in the days of the Rambam, the Teretz is, when it's with the Miut HaDoiris, when it's Nismatu HaDoiris, even though theoretically, pedagogically sounder would be the approach of discovering on our own, when you know that your student is limited, that through the proper approach, he might not fully discover what it is, sometimes you need a little hakdoma. So I would say the same thing over here in the Chovas HaLevavos. I'd say, until now, it's been very interesting. He's been telling us the difference between the alchemist and the bitochen, Baal bitochen. He's telling us some benefits of the Baal bitochen and so forth and so on. There's one thing he never told us.
What's bitochen?
Right. That's the one thing he never told us. So I'm assuming that he feels that if you wait until Perek Daled, then you'll have all of this and you'll have developed the concept, and then maybe even more than that, when you have your own concept, then you see his concept, you'll contrast the concept, you'll develop a deeper understanding. That may all be true. With the admission that I just can't control myself, but with the suggestion that it might be more beneficial to have such a working concept, I would like to develop this concept. I'll tell you where to look in 1 second. Number one. Number two, there's another reason to do this. Bitochen is taka so powerful that why should we be left another month or two or three or four until we have this maybe deeper insight into it and use it to our advantage, and maybe some of us will even stop coming by then and we won't even be doing it. So let's share this thing. So if you turn to Perek Daled, in Shar HaBitochen, and this is really the second page in my, the beginning of the third page, I don't know which volume you have, but it says, Ofnei HaYosher HaBitochen. First, he says that he speaks about here in Perek Daled that there are certain times when you're chayiv to have bitochen. And it seems that he's talking about the life situations which are your responsibility, your physical well-being, your family, your parnosa, things like this. So there's a chayiv bitochen, for whatever the reason is, and that we'll go into maybe when we get there. But then he explains, after explaining this, where this chayiv applies, then he says, Ofnei hayosher babitochon al elikim b'chol inyan mehem. Do you have that? That's
no. How many?
It's the, like, I have it like the third page, but it's after it says Echo mehem inyoni haguf, given shepirashti akdomus. The next paragraph that I have is Ofnei Hayosh. You have that?
Yes, I got it.
Okay. Ofnei, the ways of the Yosher, of the straightness in Bitochen, on Hashem, in all of these inyonim, is. Now, he is here, it seems to me, it's my contention, that in this paragraph, he describes the dynamic of what bitochen is. In Yiddish, you know, in the yeshivas, they used to say, if there's a mitzvah bitochen, you want to know v'yestmindos. How do you eat it? How do you, what is it? Like, bitochen, okay, come on. What does it mean?
How do we sink our teeth into it?
Okay, oh, very good. How do we sink our teeth into it? Okay, very good. You hear? We're up to, how do you eat bitochen? All right, that's where you came in. So we say like this. So he says like this. Ofnei hayoshev bitochen l'kimuchonin mehem is like this. This is in the middle is the third page in the fourth paragraph. Sheyashlich es nafshoi bohem lahalichois hagzar. That I think means he throws his nefesh in these inyonim to the cycle or to the goings of the divine decree. There's a divine decree. I throw my nefesh to the divine decree. I say, hey, listen, you're in charge of the world. You got your decrees. You decide how it's going to be and what's going to be. I'm throwing myself onto your decree. I guess they call that the goyim, the havdil, have such a language when they talk about these things. I notice once, surrender. They talk about surrendering to anonymous groups. What?
The
what?
Anonymous groups.
Those groups. That's right. The surrender. That concept means giving myself over. He's in charge. He's in control. What? That's right. To a high power. I'm saying, but that's the way they talk about it. Okay, that's one. Asher lahalichas hagzar, asher goz aloi haboirei mehem, that the boirei, the creator, has...
It's a little bit different taste to it, though, that way. The surrender is like, begrudgingly, you know what I mean?
Okay. All right, listen.
Here, take it, please.
Listen, you know, chokhma bagoyim tamin, teira bagoyim al tamin. They're missing at least one dimension. But anyway, but this, asher goz aloi haboirei mehem, that Hashem has, the creator has made such an edict. So they're surrendering to the decrees of the Creator. That's one. V'tivtach nafshei b'Elokim yisborach, and he trusts with his nefesh in Hashem. So this is something else. It sounds like something else. We'll have to see in a moment. Tivtach, it seems to be something else. This is yashlich elagzar. Then there's tivtach nafshei b'Elokim yisborach, and interesting. The lotion that he's using here on both of these is Elohim. We once pointed this out. Elohim is the Midas HaMishpot. So that also needs some, maybe a little attention. We'll see. The Yeda. Now this seems to be a third thing, whether it's a third, whether it's independent, whether it's together, we'll see in a moment. The Yeda, and he should know. Ki lo yigomer lo yimehem elama shekodem bedas haberi. At the end of the day, he's not going to get in all of these things except for that which Hashem has decreed from before. Ki lo yigomer lo ma shekodem b'dasa, but only what Hashem has in mind. Shehu hanochoin le'inyonov, which is the appropriate thing for his issues. Bo'ilam hazeh uvo'ilam habo, in this world and the next. V'yoyser toiv la'acharisoi, and it's even better for the end. In other words, that which Hashem does is the right thing, is the proper thing, and it's even better in the end. It's even better. It's proper for him. And the best in his future, in his eventuality, and so forth and so on. Now, I don't know, or I should say, I don't know if I know. This morning I didn't know what is going on over here. So I want to try to dissect this from two perspectives, or with two concepts. Number one. When we talk about these issues, we have to talk about an intellectual thing, a knowledge. We have to talk about an emotion. Pashtus, the Rishonim say, there's emuna and bitochen. Emuna is intellectual. They say that not every Baal emuna has bitochen. Because a person could have emuna, which means I know Hashem is in control, I know we created, I know he controls everything, I know everything he does is for the good, I know everything is up to him. However, maybe he's not going to do so good by me today, because maybe I'm not worthy. So he's the good doer, he's the all-powerful, he's all in control, but is he going to help me in this particular thing? I don't know, maybe I don't deserve it. Shema gora machet. So that's what they say. Not every ma'amin, yeah, not every ma'amin has bitochen. However, every bal bitochen is a ma'amin, because if you trust, then for sure you have to believe. Because if you don't believe that he's in control, if you don't believe that he has all power, if you don't believe that he does good, then you got no one to trust in. So trust, it seems, is more of an emotional thing. It's more of aligning my emotions with that which I intellectually believe to be true, and allowing myself to feel a certain confidence that the good is going to happen to me. Okay, now, that was the standard understanding that we had. Now here I would like to analyze. What is this? Sheyashlich es nafsho lahalichas hagzar. Throw your nefesh to the course of the edicts, of the gzeiros of Hashem, of the decrees. In other words, there's a certain system that's been decreed. Throw yourself onto it. Asher gozal ha'bor mehem. That's one. Trust your nefesh belikim. That seems to be something else. Trust. First throw your nefesh, then trust, and then know that everything that he does is going to be right and proper in this world and even eternally for him. Now I'm asking you, is yashlich emotion or logic? Is tivtach emotion or logic? Is yeda emotion or logic? One question. Let me just throw out the questions first. Question number two. Are these three independent principles or are they all one? Is he saying yashlich es nafsho asher gozar v'tivtach? That's what tivtach means and that's what yeda means. What's going on over here?
First of all, obviously, if anything, the yeda should be first.
Very good. Very good.
Yeda is the intellectual component.
That's right, but intellectual.
That's right. About that.
Yeah. That's right. There has to be Vayeda. So it doesn't seem that this Vayeda is the beginning Vayeda. That's for sure. This seems to be something at the end of the process. Right. In fact, the chronological order of this perek seems to be, this is the beginning of the process, this is the middle of the, if you take it as three things. And the Vav, by the way, is pretty indicative. The fact that it's Vitivtach Vayeda, it sounds like that these are three steps. You know, yeah, but no, usually means it's a list of things, right? It's a list of things. So it seems that there's a hashlech, there's a tivtach, and there's a yeda. If that's the case, and let's start with that assumption, let's try to figure out what these three things are. What is yashlech? Now, one thing I do know, and I don't know too much, and that is that the Rishonim built their poetic expressions on the psukim. To them, Tanakh was a reality in front of their eyes. They saw the whole Tanakh in front of their eyes, and they spoke. They didn't make up their own poetic license or their own poetic language. They borrowed constantly the language of the Tanakh. The only thing I know, I don't know too much about Tanakh, so the only posuk I happen to know is Hashlech al Hashem Yehovcho v'hu yechal kalecho. So I think for a moment that there may be a relationship over here. What does that posuk mean? Hashlech al Hashem Yehovcho, the Meforshim learn, means throw onto Hashem your burden, maso'echo, your pekle. Everybody has a pekle, a tzoros. Throw your burden to him, v'hu yechal kalecho, and he'll sustain you. You got parnosa problems. Take your parnosa, take your portfolio, instead of managing it, throw it onto him, and he'll take care of it. That's the best advice. That's what hashlech means. So it sounds like this is also, now, hashlech, by the way, is not an intellectual concept. First of all, you're not being mashlech your nefesh. I mean, when we do tashlech, we're also not mashlech the nefesh, despite the fact some people think they're throwing their sins in the water. But you can't get rid of sins so easily just by throwing them into the water. It's an emotional thing. Hashlech al Hashem Yehovcho. It's rely. I guess the best word is surrender. It's like, it's his problem. It's his problem. I got a problem. Here's my pickle. You know something? I have such trust in your desire, commitment, ability, involvement, caring, love, sensitivity that I'm taking the pickle, I'm throwing it on you. That's your problem. You don't throw it physically. It's an emotional thing. So it sounds like the first stage in this process of achieving bitochen is surrender. Yashlich al nafsho bohem lahalichas hagzar. Lahalichas hagzar means that I am surrendering to your decrees. I know that you've decreed mi yichya, mi yomus, mi bekitza, mi be'emayim, mi ba'esh, mi bacherev, mi bachayo. Everything you've decreed. I am now putting myself at your mercy, throwing myself onto your decree. Whatever you decree, that's it. Now, this is very questionable in terms of bitochen, because this is not really, what?
That that Hashachal Hashem Havchuk Lecha is not like whatever the decree is. That means he's going to take care. It's a little bit more than that.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. The take care is V'hu Yachal Kalecha. The second part here, it doesn't say. You're right. No, I'm not suggesting. Fakert, it's exactly. I'm going to suggest to you that that's what Vativ Tach Nafshei Belukim means. So we'll see like this. So in other words, I'm suggesting as follows. The first stage is, you know, something. If you want to, if a person wants to reach the level of Bitochon, then the first thing he has to say is, "There's a Rabbeinu Shalom. He's in control of the world. He'll do his will be done anyway. I surrender. I have no koyach." And I point out to you that this is critical for Bitochon, and I'll show you why, because the Chovas HaLevavos in the beginning, in the very first paragraph that we read, says that everybody trusts. He says, if you don't trust, everybody trusts something. If you don't trust Hashem, you must be trusting something else. And I understood that. I thought about it a lot, and I understood very simply. When a person wakes up in the morning, he trusts he's going to have breakfast. You don't think about it, but you trust there's going to be breakfast. Someone's going to, from someplace, it's going to come. And there's going to be lunch, and there's going to be dinner. And I'm going to have food, and I'm going to have drink, and I'm going to have air to breathe, and I'm going to find a bathroom when I have to go to the bathroom.
What? Yeah. When you turn on the faucet, uh-huh, you trust that there's a drain where the water's
out. Okay, that's right. There's certain, and I think the point is that a human being by nature is a trustee. We have to trust. We couldn't survive the world if we didn't trust. Now, if you trust Hashem, so you got it made, because he's Einoid Milvadoi. But if you don't trust him, then you got to be trusting somebody else, whether it's your own koyach, whether it's your rich father-in-law, whether it's your money in the bank, whether it's your MBA from Harvard, whatever you're trusting. But there must be something. I trust that something is going to bring me breakfast and lunch and dinner and food, clothing and shelter and whatever else. So Mimela, maybe the same thing is too. A person has to first throw himself onto Hashem, because otherwise he can't trust Hashem, because if he doesn't submit or surrender to the divine decree, then he still thinks, I could do something. I don't know what the decree on Yom Kippur, that's irrelevant. I got an idea. I'll make some money. I'll do this. I'll do that. I got a friend. I got this. I got connections. I got protection. He must be thinking something. But when he surrenders to Hashem, he says, there is nothing else. I surrender. Surrender means you give up your weapons. You give up everything. I have no koyach. I have nothing. I surrender to you. So the first step is surrender. Because if there's no surrender, then there's bitochen in something else, which whether it's myself or something else, which interferes with bitochen Hashem. Then he says the next step is tivtach nafshei
berikim yisborach. That's the way it goes, though?
What?
Because first he has to kind of make a leap of faith, sort of, before he believes.
Well, no, this is not. No, excuse me. Wait a second. Intellectually, we're talking about bitochen here. Intellectually, I don't need a leap of faith. I know that God controls the world. And by the way, it's interesting you mentioned that concept. That, in my opinion, is a completely Christian concept, the leap of faith. When the Rambam talks about emunah, he talks about yediyah. Onoichi Hashem alekecho, the mitzvah of emunah doesn't say Hashem says, believe in me. Hashem says, I'm the guy that's been performing all those miracles in Mitzrayim that you saw. I'm the guy that killed the B'chiris and let you live. I'm the guy that made Choshech and you walked around in broad daylight. I'm the guy that made blood and you were drinking water out of the blood. I'm the guy that split the sea and you guys walked through as the Mitzrayim were bobbling. At the same time, in drowning, you were walking through on dry land. When I say, I'm not saying, hey, I need a leap of faith. There was no faith. There was no leap.
I know.
I was introduced. I say, Shalom Aleichem. Remember me? I'm the guy who did all of that.
That works today.
What?
That works today.
Well, it works today. I don't want to give an Arachim seminar here, but it works today because we have that public event, which was witnessed by millions of people, the miracles introducing Hashem, and then his introduction to them as the Nosein HaTorah was witnessed by millions of people who recorded this event in the document exactly as it happened and gave those documents over to their children. So there was eyewitness testimony to millions of people that this actually happened. The generations after that kept passing down this eyewitness testimony in a firm system of never allowing any change. The Baal Kaira even misreads a word and they'll stone him. You know what I mean? The change, the document had to be perfect. It was always checked with the main document. Each Shevet had its own Sefer Torah, identical. Thousands of years later, we look at Sefer Torah, they're still identical.
So we have a good corporation.
What?
We have a good corporation.
No, we have...
A good organization.
No, and therefore we have testimony that has been passed down from generation to generation. And if you think the testimony is only written testimony, there has never been a generation that hasn't lived the lifestyle that has been written within these directives. They put on the tefillin, they put on the tzitzis, they put on the mezuzah, they ate the matzah, they sat in the sukkah, they ate the moror, they did the pidyon habenim, pidyon petah b'chor, and this and that. So it was a document that was a tradition of testimony that was passed down from generation to generation, both orally and in writing, in accurate writing. Any change was punishable by death. Nobody dared to change. All of the documents that we find today are still identical with the previous document. And all of this was lived together with a lifestyle which reflected from generation to generation. Everybody saw their father's tefillin. Nobody ever saw pink tefillin. I know they're black because my fathers were black and his fathers were black in it. And that's it. What?
It's not going to be the same idea.
What's that?
It's a different idea of the guy who actually saw, you know, the water turn into blood.
Well,
and the guy,
you know
that his great-grandfather, great-great-great-grandfather.
Well, it depends. You see, the point is like this. Yes and no. Yes and no. What do I mean by yes and no? There might even be, and this is really sticking my neck out, there might even be more difficulty for the person who saw it than for the person who heard it. And let me tell you what you mean. Moshe Rabbeinu, you hear? Moshe Rabbeinu stood in front. Moshe Rabbeinu stood in front of... That explains it. But let me just see how it works. You hear? Moshe Rabbeinu stood in front of millions of Jews that had gone through 40 years in the Midbar. He was reviewing with them at the end of his life. And they had witnessed Maimon Har Sinai. They were younger, some of them. They had eaten mon for breakfast that day and for all the 40 years. They lived in central air at night and heat by night and central air by day. And they had them air that fed them water in the middle of a midbar and so forth and so on. They lived a life of miracles. They knew it. They saw it. And Moshe Rabbeinu says at the end of everything, V'yodato hayoim v'hashivoysa el avovecho. You know it, but return it to your heart. The Targum says, U'sesuv l'libach, return it to your heart. How can I return to my heart something that I know? What are you talking about? I know it. Where am I? Did I lose it to return it? The teretz is, I like to give it a moshel. I say there's a rabbi, some of you people here know in Brooklyn, who once told me that years ago, that he keeps his Rosh Hashiva's picture on the desk. And when he wants to talk Lashon Hara or something, he puts the picture face down. We do that with Hashem. I know it, but I have to constantly review it and re-enter it into my heart. Because since we would like to be free of the shackles of the implication of this knowledge, so we tend to try to put the picture face down. So we have to review it. So in a sense, the generation that witnessed it has even more pressure than we do. Because it was so blatant, it was so powerful, it was too powerful that they even have to deny it. It's almost like, I like to put the moshel like this. We like to say that judgment is made based on information and knowledge beyond a reasonable doubt, right? We don't say beyond the shadow of a doubt. Because when someone tries to judge beyond the shadow of a doubt, they'll always see shadows. The shadow of a doubt? There's always a shadow of a doubt. Maybe I'm dreaming. Maybe we're all dreaming. Maybe, I don't know. What? Yeah. I mean, it makes a person a nervous wreck. So we say, you know, we live beyond a reasonable doubt. Reasonable doubt is we get into our car in the morning, we go in the car. It's only beyond a reasonable doubt you're going to make it. We get on a plane, we drink the city, or even you guys in Nassau County, we drink the water, you know, only beyond a reasonable doubt that it won't kill us. We take medicine, only beyond a reasonable doubt. Everything we do is beyond a reasonable doubt. That's all. So if that's the standard, then I ask you, all we need and all we want is a reasonable doubt. In a sense, I can represent to you that our emunah may even be more secure or less fraught, whatever the word is, than even the original generation, because we're not under such pressure to deny it. We have to get beyond a reasonable doubt. If you think about it, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. And if you still have any reasonable doubts after everything that we said, bekitzer, because this is really 4 days of work, but we just did it in 4 minutes. But if you have any reasonable doubt beyond that, then I suggest you just one more thing. Chazal tell us that the Torah is full of evidence besides testimony. Evidence means information that no human being, when this document was written, could have ever known. There's no human being that could have known that all fish that have scales will have fins. There's no human being that could have ever known that the Beis HaMikdash, the first one will be destroyed and the second will be destroyed and the Jewish people will be chased all over the world and that they'll be for so many years in Golis and then they'll eventually come back there to Israel. And v'chulei, there's hundreds and hundreds of statements, prophetic statements, which we saw coming to fruition in our time or in previous generations. So there's information, there's scientific information. The Torah is full of evidence. Not only is it testimony, but it's evidence, and the evidence is the fact that no human being other than the Maker itself could have known this. So anyway, let's just leave that for now, because that's not the topic of this evening. Okay, so I just want to suggest the following. So that it seems there's a three-step process over here. The first step is yashliches nafshei. That is an emotional thing. The first emotion has to be the emotion of surrender. If you really want to trust Hashem 100%, you first have to surrender to Him. Because if you don't surrender your weapons, you still think that you have a weapon. You got to surrender your MBA. You got to surrender your bank account. You got to surrender your stock portfolio. You got to surrender your house, your car, your rich father-in-law. You got to surrender everything. Once you surrender, but don't, I mean, maybe your mother-in-law, but you know what I mean? Don't turn them in, but be ready, feel, hashlich, an emotional surrender. Emotionally surrender, I got nothing. It's all up to you. Then, v'tivtach nashu b'adikim. Then a person can take a trust. If it's all up to him, and I have nothing, now I become capable of trusting that he's going to do it for me. Because when I surrender to him, number one, I know that he's all-powerful. Otherwise, I'm not surrendering to him, right? Now, I'm trusting him because I know that he's good. That's what bitochen is. Bitochen is bechesed Hashem. David HaMelech repeated, v'ani b'chastucho b'tachti ha'boteach b'Hashem. No, that's a different pasuk. But there's many, many psukim all talk about trusting Hashem and his chesed and his goodness and his kindness. So I'm trusting his kindness. He's going to take care of me. Now, there's one more step to bitochen, and if we don't have it, we don't have the real bitochen, because our trust is not complete. What could be lacking? Listen to this. See how it comes out. What could be lacking in a trust that completely trusts that you will deliver everything for me? There's only one thing that could be lacking, and that's what if you don't? Maybe what if I don't? I trust that he will. But it's not enough. There has to be a certain element of, and the Chofetz Chaim Lvov says this someplace else too, he says after a whole list of things that the Baal Bitochen has to have, one of the things is that he has to trust that if it doesn't happen, that it's all for the good. I trust that it's going to happen. What are you telling me? The Torah says such a thing, we call it Lu Yitzur. If it would happen that it wouldn't happen, would you also be able to accept it? If the answer is no, then you don't trust Hashem's kindness. You're trusting something else. You're trusting yourself. You're trusting your desire. Because if you trust his kindness, when I trust your kindness, I know you're the perfect kindness. So I'm saying, listen, I know you're not going to disappoint me. And if you disappoint me, that must be the kindest thing to do. So I'm going to suggest to you that the third thing is v'yeda. After you now have put your trust in Hashem that he's going to deliver, there's one more requirement. V'yeda. After everything is said and done, not the prerequisite as you pointed out, but after everything is said and done, ultimately what's going to happen is that which ultimately his will be done, and it will be the proper thing, this world and the next, and the best, in the long run, what he will do will be the best. So it seems from this that there's three stages, three emotions, three aspects of this bitochen. There's the first is the surrender that I have no koyach and I have nothing and there is nothing other than him. The second one is this this trust that he's going to deliver for me. And the third is a footnote to the trust that says, even though you've surrendered and even though you're trusting that he is going to deliver, but you also have to know that whatever's going to happen ultimately, which means even if he doesn't seem to deliver according to your agenda, whatever's going to happen ultimately is nochoin, it's the proper thing, it's from him, it's what his das was, and he has superior das, and he knows what's good for us in this world and the next. V'yoyser toiv l'acharisoi, and it's even the best for the long run, in the long, in the total picture, in the long run, this is the best possible thing that could be. And that's, I think, the formula for what exactly this bitochen is. It starts with a surrender. It then, after the surrender, once I have nothing, it can allow me to, you know, that I think I mentioned here once, I learned from my mother-in-law. She once said to me, she says, "Du musst haben bitochen, du hast kein Brere nicht. You have to have bitochen, you have no choice. You have nothing else. If you have nothing else, then that's it." And the truth of the matter is, if you have nothing else, it's easier to trust him because he's going to leave me with nothing else. He, for sure, is going to take care of me. How could it be? So when I realize that a hashlech is nafshoy, I have nothing, it's all up to him, I have no koyach, and then I rely on him because his chesed, I just have to keep in mind that ultimately he's going to do what he has to do, he's going to do what's ultimately for the good. And I guess it requires one thing too. The fact that he puts Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba and Tov Lachrisoy in here, it requires one more little detail. And that is as follows. The most difficult part of people coping with the difficulties and disappointments of this world is the fact that they don't see this world as a continuum to the next world. They don't see it. It's one continuum. There's a beginning and there's eternity. Because if we saw it that way, then it would be very simple. In this world, it don't make sense. But this is just the beginning. This is the easy part. This part is over before you blink. And there's an eternity out there. For example, if a person would know that I'm going through four difficult years now of college, I'm going to get a degree, and then as soon as I get my degree, I'm starting to make $250,000 a year. So the disappointment of poverty, of working, waiting tables in the cafeteria there to earn my degree, is not so terrible because it's 4 years. It goes fast. One, two, three. It goes very fast. And then I know 250, they're going to be running to take me from all over.
With delay of gratification. Well,
that's right. Delay gratification. If you see the area of gratification in front of your eyes, it's possible to delay it. But if you talk about Jene Welt, they used to talk Jene Welt, the andere Welt, the next world, the other world, what the other world, let's face it. Where's that world? Where is it? When do you get there? How do you get there? Whose world is it? Who's in charge? Who's the boss? What's it all about? But ultimately, if we have that concept, so then we say like this, you know, I'm disappointed. I trusted, and he didn't deliver. And it doesn't look like he's going to deliver, especially sometimes the end of the trust is death. I trusted, and the guy didn't make it. So if this world is an end unto itself, then there's only disappointment. My trust has been denied. My trust has been compromised. My trust has been, must be a better word for it, but whatever. But if there's an eternity, what are you talking about? This is just the beginning. You got a head start on the real world. You're in much better shape. I always tell that to people in bereavement, in consoling. The pain and suffering is for those who are left. The one who went on, he got no problems. Of Emes, he has no problems. He, you know, and a person who suffered in this world, he goes straight up there, you know. So he's don't worry about him. It's us. We got the problem. We're in pain because of the loss. We're lonely. You know, so if you have that attitude that there's an achris, there's olam hazeh and olam habo, then the bitochen. So with the hashlech that I'm surrendering, with the trust that he's going to do it for me, with the footnote that even if he doesn't, it's because in the global picture he has something that's more proper and that's better. That's the way a person puts his trust in Hashem.
Trust in this world.
What?
The fact that you know that it could be that it's not the best thing.
Okay, very good. So that's what I said before in passing in 2 seconds. And I say, it seems from the Chovos HaLevavos here, it's because I say this is the Pshat, it's a little conjecture, I don't know for sure. But in the other place where he lists that as one of the criteria, that if it doesn't happen, you're going to accept it. Basically, it's possible to be 100% sure that something is going to happen. But since my trust, you see, let's analyze it one step further. What is my trust? What am I trusting when I say it's going to happen? Do I trust Hashem it's going to happen? I need money. I need $10. I trust Hashem is going to give me the $10. Is that the emotion, or is the emotion maybe something else? I trust Hashem's kindness, and he knows how much I need that $10. Therefore, because I trust his kindness, I believe that he would give me the $10. $10. Now, if it's the first one, you're right. I trust he's going to give me the $10. Then what are you talking about? What if he doesn't? There is no such thing. You trust 100% that he's going to give it to you. But if my trust is in his kindness, and therefore he's going to give it to me, if his kindness deems, if I have such a trust in his kindness, then I have to trust his kindness enough to be willing to recognize that if he deems that this is kinder for me, then he'll do that and he'll substitute that. What if he says, I don't want to give you the $10, yeah? Because you're going to waste it. I want to give you $20. Just wait another 10 minutes. Maybe if the 10 minutes is not good, I don't wait $10. But wait 2 minutes, or I'll give you $120. Wait 10 minutes. So if I trust his kindness, so then if he doesn't do it, my answer must be, there must be more kindness out there. What?
You have the trust initially, knowing the end result, maybe you're not going to get it.
No, because I can still know, because of the kindness, I can believe, I can feel, it's an emotion, I can feel that I'm going to get it. What? No, it's definitely not logical. I'll prove to you it's not logical. It bitochen can't be logical. Because mi odea, how is it called? Shema gorem achet. Mi odea mishpte Hashem. That's the Chazon Ish's Loshon. I trust Hashem is going to give me $100. How do you know? Maybe you're not supposed to get $100. Terence says, it's an emotion. Because I know how kind he is, because I know how much I want it, because I know how strongly I feel, so I'm trusting he's going to do it. Now, in the back of that trust, if I am trusting his kindness, then I have to defer to him if his kindness has said, hey, you know something? In the fullness of my kindness, I'm telling you, or let me put it a little differently to you this way. You don't really want $100. You want $100 worth of happiness. You want $100 worth of success. You want $100. You don't want the money if you're going to lose it the next day. You don't want the money if it's going to bring you misery. I know better what you want. You are looking, it isn't the dollar bills, what you get this obsession with green. That's not what you want. You want the buying power. I'll give you more of what you want. If I ultimately trust his chesed, so I can trust it enough to say I'm sure I'm going to get it, but lo yitzur, I wouldn't get it, I'm just as confident because what I trusted was his kindness.
Why don't we just
cut out the middleman?
Should I be talking for a specific thing or just saying, Joe, whatever he gives me is fine?
No, that depends. A person could have for a specific thing if he wants. If he doesn't, the highest level is, I don't care what you give me. I trust you so much, whatever you give me is good. But most of us are not on that level, so we have to go. I have the vibe over there.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.